The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville?
Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Kevin McCarthy doesn't have enough votes to be speaker, so it just keeps going and going and going. But Jim Jordan's getting a bunch of votes. Jordan himself, by the way, voting for McCarthy. But Jim Jordan's getting a bunch of votes, and people are beginning to ever so slightly break away from McCarthy. Byron Donalds just decided to switch his vote from McCarthy to Jim Jordan. So we'll see how that's going. So that looks like at the moment Jim Jordan has 20 Republicans supporting him. This has caused, you know, I think a healthy debate on the right about not only the future of the party, but certainly about this specific thing. Should Kevin McCarthy be Speaker of the House? Will he serve the nation well in that role? For more on that subject and some other subjects as well, we bring in a guest we love having on. Ben Domenech is here, editor-at-large at The Spectator. He's an author of The Transom and a Fox News contributor. Ben, great to have you with us.
Hey, it's always great to be with you, Vince. I mean, it's pretty, it's a historical abnormality that we have, this type of, in-your-face series of speaker votes. And one of the things that I think is actually good about this is that it reveals to people the fact that the Republican Party has this kind of fractious internal debate going on about a number of different things. Mm-hmm. That they allow to play out in public. You know, in the Democratic Party, they solve these things behind closed doors. And so the media loves that. The D.C. media is just like, oh, look, you know, Nancy Pelosi, she's so powerful. She's so respected. You know, she's able to, you know, get all these ducks in a row every time that she has, you know, any kind of leadership vote happen. To me, that is actually not a good thing. That's not, you know, the way that a democratic republic ought to solve its problems in front of people. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, this in a way, it's a good thing. At the same time, I'm very frustrated by it. I don't know what your attitude is toward any of this. I haven't listened and heard, you know, your attitude towards Kevin McCarthy or any of the other candidates. So I'll just tell you what my take is.
Please.
Kevin McCarthy is not someone who I would describe as a strong ideological conservative, but he is also someone who I think of as being kind of a frat leader. You know, he's not the guy who is the life of the party, but he is the guy who makes sure that the party is paid for. And that's a very important thing. In this past cycle, he and his attendant groups raised almost $500 million to support Republican candidates. He had a great recruitment machine that brought in, you know, a lot of Hispanic and female people who were, running for office. And in the previous cycle, he obviously overperformed in a demonstrable way in 2020. You know, and I think that this is a situation where, unfortunately, he is being condemned for a lot of things that I don't think he's guilty of. You know, I look back at the previous speakers, people like John Boehner, who were clearly not just not conservative, but they were anti-conservative in a lot of different respects. The way that Boehner treated the House Freedom Caucus, you know, was ultimately his undoing. And then you had an ideological conservative on fiscal issues, at least, in Paul Ryan, but he was also not someone who was down with the, like, populist agenda and that kind of thing. I think that McCarthy is pretty malleable. I think that he makes a lot of sense as a speaker for a moment in which there's not going to be a lot demanded of you other than holding the line against the Biden agenda. But the way that he's being treated by a lot of these people is just madness to me. The fact mm-hmm. that Marjorie Taylor Greene and Dan Crenshaw can come out and say, you know, it's idiocy. We should nominate and approve him as Speaker. And at the same time that people like Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz are coming out and saying that it's, you know, unacceptable to do this. Look, I'm going to tell you something. Andy Biggs, who's a representative from Arizona,
yeah,
a state that I know and love, is someone I would not trust to change the tire on my car. And yet he got 10 votes out of this first round of things. Okay. The author of, you know, two books from Nephi, Utah, about how the Mormon church, you know, approves and displays the lessons of liberty, is the guy who they're all voting for. I'm sorry. This is not a person who's ever going to be the Speaker of the House.
But the Biggs himself, I mean, we had Biggs on. So these are all interesting points. And I think I agree with much of what you're saying. You know, you look at a guy like Kevin McCarthy, and you're right. I never get the impression that he has any sort of ideological adherence or commitment. It's always with him that he's a tactician. He's a strategist. He's a fundraiser. He's a guy who has granular understanding of congressional districts. And basically a utility player, an important utility player for a Republican party that wants to
win. He should be hitting seventh. Okay.
Yes.
He is not your leadoff guy, and he is not your fourth bat to club people in. He's just the guy who comes in and raises money.
No, for sure. I totally agree with that. But we are in the midst of, I would say, you know, the left makes a lot of like overwrought claims about threats to democracy and how the right poses.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Null. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
As a threat to democracy. It's all just so ridiculous. We've talked about it at length. But meanwhile, it's a massive case of projection. So what we have is these cancers that have infected our government. And the government is being used by the left and all of our institutions against the people. Everything from banking to the FBI to the CIA to the CDC. I mean, you go down the list, there are threats everywhere. And the question becomes for Republicans, if they have control of any body of the government, will that leader have the backbone, the spine, the capability, and the drive to confront those forces? And when you think of all of those things, Kevin McCarthy's not the guy who jumps to the front of that list for me.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. Yeah, and this is the thing that I think is sort of deep down. It's attitudinal more than it is ideological. It's sort of, you know, are you willing to go to the mattresses against these bureaucratic forces that we see aligned against the American people? And that's where I think that Kevin has not done a good job of convincing people that he's willing to do that. Now, he's convinced Jim Jordan, which to me is a big deal, because I think that Jim Jordan is probably a future Speaker of the U.S. House, assuming that he stays there long enough.
But do you think that's real? Do you think that's real? So here's the reason I'm asking.
Just so the audience understands
what I'm saying. Jim Jordan is voting routinely today for Kevin McCarthy. And in fact, in the second round, nominated Kevin McCarthy. But the candidate who is getting all the alternative support right now is Jim Jordan. So Jim Jordan looks like a great guy right now. He looks like the guy who's like, he's magnanimous. He's just, no, it's not me. I'm going to support Kevin McCarthy. He looks great. But in the end of this, Jim Jordan could be the beneficiary of all of it. I mean,
Vince, you and I know that Jim Jordan's a very smart man and that he had exercised outsized power under the Ryan speakership. He wants to do that again. I think he wants to be Speaker in like 2026 or something like that. He wants to be Speaker under a Ron DeSantis presidency or something like that, where he can get a lot done. Okay. He does not want to be Speaker right now when you're not going to get a lot done. You're going to be, you know, basically just doing defensive maneuvers all day long against the Biden administration and trying to do investigations and, you know, figuring things out. He doesn't want to be doing that. he is perfectly happy running the Judiciary Committee and not having to deal with the madness organizing all these different people.
But see, but that way of thinking is perfectly good if we lived in a normal time, which is like, I'm just going to bide my time, and then eventually I'll be in a position where Republicans have power. No. Wait a second.
Right.
What I just described a moment ago is the existential threat we're living under. You need somebody who's competent enough to be able to push back on it now. We can't wait.
I think that here's the way that I would frame it. I was not a fan of the John Boehner speakership. I thought that he actively hated conservatives and undermined them, prevented them from having the role that they should.
He just came back to throw a glowing send-off for Nancy Pelosi. He was like rubbing it in the face of the right.
Have you ever seen the movie Michael Clayton, where it's a great movie, and there's a scene where it's this conversation between George Clooney and Tilda Swinton, where she's tried to kill him, and he's like, "Don't you understand? I'm not your problem. I'm not someone you try to kill. I'm someone you'd buy." And from my perspective, when it came to the Boehner speakership, it was like, you can buy these conservatives. Just give them something to run for. Give them the thing that they want. The impeach this or the investigate this. Give them that. And he couldn't. Okay, because he was such a creature of Washington that he didn't have that foresight. I think that, unfortunately, right now, this is a laughingstock. Okay, Democrats love this. The media loves this. By the way, I had to listen to CNN. I had to listen to CNN today for like 30 minutes. They said so many fake things about what was going on in Washington. Jake Tapper and Anderson Cooper, like, you haven't covered Capitol Hill forever. Like, at least Manu Raju can come on and like correct them on some things and say, "Yeah, no, you didn't know what you were talking about." And it's like, it's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing at so many different levels.
But here's the thing, that embarrassment, the feature of like, oh, the right's being embarrassed by all of this, Republicans in disarray. Like, I have such little concern or patience for that anymore. It's like,
I don't care what they think. Like, blow it out. I mean, come on. Here's the thing that I care about. What I care about is a conservative majority moving forward to investigate the things that they can investigate.
Totally.
Which matters a lot to me, particularly when it comes to COVID, but also when it comes to social media, when it comes to Twitter, when it comes to Google, when it comes to Facebook, everything that's going to matter in the next election. Like, these are the things that they can do. They're not going to be able to pass legislation. They're not going to be able to change the direction of the country because of the way that this all stacked up.
They can defund so many of these programs.
They can defund. They can block. They can be a thorn in the side of this dominant leftist bureaucratic majority that is dedicated to running our lives and dictating the way that we live. And that, to me, is of the utmost importance. So the sooner that we can get on the same page and do that, the better.
I agree with that. I want to get to one other topic in a moment, but before I do, Jim Jordan, would you be okay if he ends up being Speaker of the House now?
100%. Are you?
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
Kidding, I'd probably prefer him.
Okay, all right.
I don't think he wants it right now. I think he wants it in the future. He wants, this is a problem for future Jim.
The future Jim. All right, let me ask you about former President Donald Trump, because this week he put out a remark that basically said that it was pro-life people who were just much too intense, that didn't provide for exceptions to rape, incest, life of the mother. They weren't accommodating to those during the midterms. And as a result, Republicans didn't get the red wave that they were hoping for because some people took a too fervent of a pro-life position. I'm summarizing him, by the way, but that he expressed all of this on Truth Social.
Yeah.
I think I got it about as accurate as I can without reading it directly. What did you make of that move by Trump? Who, by the way, a lot of pro-lifers very happy with having, considering his work overturned Roe v. Wade.
Vince, this is the stupidest thing I think I've ever seen Donald Trump do. And I'm not exaggerating. He's done some dumb things in the past. But the simple fact is that going into this election, there is a huge amount of vested support for him from pro-life Americans to say, you know, thank you for the fact that you actually, you know, nominated and got through the Supreme Court justices that ultimately gave us this great victory. And now he has turned around and he has blamed them for the lack of success in this midterm election. First off, it's factually false. If you just drill down and you look at the deciding factors when it came to so many of these races, this was not the overwhelming factor, okay? It wasn't. And he also said in that Truth Social post that once pro-lifers got what they wanted from the Supreme Court, that they disappeared never to be seen again.
Yeah, here's the quote. Also, it says, also the people that pushed so hard for decades against abortion got their wish from the U.S. Supreme Court and just plain disappeared, not to be seen again.
That's simply not true. Republicans maxed out their vote, okay? They won the popular vote. Pro-lifers came out and they voted the way that we expected them to for Republicans. This is simply not true. To blame them in this moment is such political, like, I mean, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You know, there's so many, you know, pro-life Americans who I know I've gone and spoken to, I've met across the country, who say, you know, I have so many problems with other things that Donald Trump did, but he got us this. Okay. They have this vested, you know, feeling of like wanting to support him because he got us this win that the Bushes couldn't get us. Nobody else could get us. We finally got it with him. And instead he just crapped all over them and just said, you know, they're to blame for this midterm. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever, Vince. And it also doesn't work as just sort of a factual analysis of what happened. Look, absolutely, the abortion issue raised the number of young people voting for Democrats. You can look at all of the different polls, and they will tell you that. However, if you look at the different races that actually mattered,
yes,
the people who lost were not people who were abortion radicals, you know, and they were not and abortion, like on the actual issue, pro-life incumbents overwhelmingly won. They all won. I mean, it's you know.
Well, governor, there's one other piece. Senator, there's one other piece to this, and I agree with him in one sense, but it's not the way he intended. Which is, to the extent that Republicans were hurt by the abortion issue, it's that they were ineloquent in the way they talked about it. Because there were opportunities 100%. On the right for them to throw it in the faces of the left and say, you want to know who the real extremist is? It's the person who supports not only aborting a child all the way through childbirth, but upon a failed abortion, allowing that child to die on an operating table.
Since
that's an extreme
correct.
Position, that's and the right failed
correct.
To put that out.
And there were so many consultants who are in the same class that frankly did not like the result of that opinion, did not like Dobbs, that gave them bad advice, that said, run away from this, don't talk about it. They were wrong. They've always been wrong. And pushing back against that and saying, no, you should point out how extreme the other side is, because they are extreme. They're totally out of step. And if you look at the full data, it shows that over and over again. So look, I'm not someone who obviously tries to, judge or misjudge the legacy of the former president, because obviously he's proved us wrong in so many different respects. But to me, this is a huge error, because it's something that actually played to his benefit within this 2024 nomination cycle for him to be able to say, hey, look, I achieved something for you that nobody else could achieve.
And his victory for life was historic, and he should embrace that, not turn away from
it. Yeah, he should embrace it, not light it on fire.
Yeah. Yeah. Ben Domenech, always great to talk to you, man. Please have an excellent new year. Glad to have you with us today.
Hey, love to be with you as always, Vince. Think the world of you, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Ben. All right.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.